Okay, good. The Better World, specifically, these are, I guess you would call them alternative ideas, alternative magazines. Richard Wolf, Dan Corton.
Yes.
Okay. On the Better World magazine is an outfit, and David Saxon's here really talking about it. La Via Campesina. All that means is peasants or the peasant farmer. Okay. If I, at some point in my life, I hope to be a peasant farmer. Okay. As I get older and more mature, and the farm takes hold, then I strive to become a peasant farmer. If you look at the Better World, you see lots of information. I'll start throwing out some statistics just as an example. Any of these about dirt, about soil, okay? 70% of the world's population is fed by 70% of the world's farmers. Okay, the myth in this country is that me, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant male landowner of European descent, driving a $250,000 tractor, completely enclosed, environmentally controlled with GPS feeds the world. And that's a lie. That was an advertising scam, okay? It's a myth. It's not true at all. The people that are feeding the world, 70% of the world's population is fed by 70% of the world's farmers. Those farmers are female, living on 3 hectares of land or less. Hectares, I believe it equates, 1 hectare is about 2.2 acres approximately, okay? So you've got less than 5-6 acres of land, and those women are living in poverty, and they are feeding the world, okay? What the American farmer does, and what your industrial, agricultural industrial model is killing us, okay? It's killing us, every one of us. But the model is set up to deceive us, okay? So we plant 10,000 acres of corn, 100,000 acres of beans, okay? Cotton. Most of those crops are what they call commodity crops. And so with corn and beans specifically, they're not being used to feed us. Oh, you might go to the grocery store and you might buy a bottle of vegetable oil, which is genetically engineered, genetically modified soy or corn. It's not really feeding us, okay? A lot of that goes into animal feed. A lot of those animals aren't really feeding us, okay? Not healthy food. Okay? A lot of that product, soy, corn and soy specifically, is used in industrial manufacturing, paints, ethanol. Everybody uses ethanol in their vehicles right now. That's corn, okay? Those companies that are producing monocultures, okay? In one individual crop, they call it continuous corn, continuous bean. So in other words, I take 10,000 acres and I plant corn on that 10,000 acres every year until I have completely destroyed that section of the planet. Okay, that's monoculture. We've got a monoculture of the mind. Has anybody heard of Vandana Shiva?
Yeah.
The Navdaya Institute? Okay, exactly. Listen to her whole spiel about the monoculture of the mind, okay? It doesn't just permeate agriculture. It permeates everybody here in this room. It permeates academics, okay? It permeates the entire planet. I think we obviously got a slide up.
Woo!
Okay, so I'm going to start from the beginning, okay? I'm going to take a deep breath. And the slides are up. I obviously am not a technical person. So the pictures are all ours. They come from Bittersweet Farm in Hubleton, New York. They come from Little Grass Food Works in Canton, New York. Birdsfoot Farm in Canton, New York. Sweetgrass. These are all small-scale, local, regenerative agricultural entrepreneurs. They come from Milkweed Tussock Tubers, okay? So...
Milkweed
Tussock?
Never heard of it.
Oh, of course you haven't. Of course you haven't. They live in Hooterville, okay? Have you ever heard of it? Okay? Hooterville is the big city right outside of Hubleton.
Yeah.
Okay, Hooterville, Petticoat Junction has a big water tower, okay? So Hubleton, New York is about half the size of Hooterville, okay?
Yes.
So right now, there's more people in this room than there are in Hubleton. Okay? Especially during the summer. Okay? So anyway, Milkweed Tussock Tubers. Anybody familiar with milkweed, the plant?
Yes.
Oh,
swamp
milkweed? To grow.
Exactly. You know, the monarch butterfly?
Yes.
Okay? There's a moth called the tussock moth, okay? Quite a pretty little moth that also doesn't consume the milkweed, but it will land on the milkweed and lay eggs just like the monarch butterfly. Okay, Roundup, is everybody familiar with Roundup Ready
yes.
Corn?
Yes.
Ready Corn,
yes.
Weed, glyphosate, okay. So Roundup is wiping out the milkweed. Yep. Therefore, it's wiping out the only food source for the monarch butterfly, okay? And the theory is that, you know, when 1 million butterflies flap their wings, something good happens. We've reduced the population of the monarch butterfly because we've reduced their food source. Okay? We've also, scientific reductionism has reduced our food source. Okay? There was a point in history in which we were consuming thousands of different plants. Okay? We're now down to about a half a dozen commodity crops, right? Corn, oats, wheat, soy, cotton, rice. Okay? Then we consume vegetables, right? Everybody eats their broccoli, okay? And I'm assuming everybody has a healthy dose of celeriac and kohlrabi as well, right? That's pretty common when you go to the grocery store and you pick those up, right? The avalanche pea, the eat-all pea, okay? I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but the eat-all pea, okay? Seed Savers Exchange, Decorah, Iowa, researched around the world, and they were looking for seeds that had been saved from a variety of pea called the eat-all, E-A-T, all pea, okay? They found 101 seeds left on the planet. There may have been more, but that's all they could find on the planet. And it's Diane and Steve, Diane Wheatley, Seed Savers Exchange, Decorah, Iowa. They have quite a research network. It's not like they're throwing $50 trying to find peas. They're throwing millions of dollars out there looking for those pea seeds. They found 101 seeds. They sent Bittersweet Farm, my wife Ann Bennett, 50 of those seeds and said, awesome. Ann, good luck. See what she can do. Okay? Oh. So she put those 50 seeds in the ground and her and my daughter babied them. At the end of the season, they harvest a little over 3,000 seeds from 50 pea seeds. Okay? That's community, okay?
Yes.
That's multiplication, right? Okay. So she took those seeds, she held back 50 seeds for herself, sent the rest out to Dr. Cora, Iowa. They took what they needed or wanted, but they said about half of those, and I'm never going to pronounce this right, but it's the genetic seed bank in Svalbard, Norway. You've seen pictures of it, right? It's a big concrete building. You know how to pronounce it? Did I get close? It begins with an SV, right?
Svalbard.
Okay, it begins with an SV. So now Bittersweet Farm under Anna Bennett has saved the eat-all pea seed from extinction. About 1,200 to 1,500 seeds are now in there. So this year right now, our growing season right now, we have a pea that's only numbered, okay? It's called the 126. It's a predecessor. It's an open pollinated old variety, okay, heirloom variety, that was the predecessor to your sugar snaps. Everybody knows what sugar snaps are. So this one, pretty ugly, pretty gross tasting in my opinion, but again, it was relatively rare seed, and we need, what do we need? We need diversity, okay? We need genetic diversity. So they sent and 50 more seeds of that one. And right now, when I left the farm Wednesday, I guess, I left Thursday, whatever, the other day I left, the seeds were just about perfect. They plump, they filled out the pods, and in about 2 weeks, they'll be ready to harvest. My guess is that she's gonna come close to another 3,000 seeds,
awesome.
Okay?
Awesome.
And as long as somebody continues to do that, she does joke because she has muscular dystrophy, myasthenia gravis, rheumatoid arthritis, she's had a thyroid condition, she's had her thymus removed, she's got type 2 diabetes, she's confined to an electric wheelchair, by the way. Okay, I think you'll see pictures up here of her at some point. The pictures are meant to inspire you, and I'll get to all this in just a second.
Are we out of sync completely?
Yeah, we are, but just let her roll. On a farm, you have to work with what you got, okay? It's raining, you make do, okay? You gotta make hay when the sun shines. Mm-hmm. The sunshine is right now on that. So anyway, I'll step back here. We'll try and get closer to the thing.
I get back up.
Okay, if you can start at the beginning. Okay, SOIL is an acronym for Securing Our Individual Liberties, all right? So we've got to start off with the soil. And one thing I want you to really look at, everybody's large here, the soil is a medium in which something takes hold and develops, okay? The theme of this A&M is roots, right? Okay, it's a grassroots organization, okay? Contrary to many people, hydroponics and aquaponics are not a healthy alternative to healthy food production.
Thank you.
Okay, they're not. NOFA New York, the Northeast Organic Farmers Association of New York, you've got NOFA Pennsylvania, you've got NOFA Mass, you've got Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. Many people in that organization are working very, very hard against the United States government. They want the roots of the soil to be in the ground. So, my name is Brian Bennett. I'm from Bittersweet Farm in Hewelton, New York, okay? and I am not a soil scientist. So if you came into this room expecting me to wax poetically about alpha soles, histosoles, monosoles, spotosoles, or the cation exchange capacity of clay, you come into the wrong room. That's not something I can do. What I want you to do, though, is listen close, okay? Listen closely to the words of Clarissa Pinkola Estes, okay? And they're up here. Ours is not the task of fixing the entire world all at once, but of stretching out to mend that part of the world that is within our reach. Any small, calm thing that one soul can do to help another soul, to assist some portion of this poor, suffering world, will help immensely. It's not given to us to know which acts or by whom will cause the critical mass to tip toward an enduring good. What is needed for dramatic change in this accumulation of acts, adding, adding to, adding more, continuing to add. We know that it does not take everyone on earth to bring justice and peace, but only a small, determined group who will not give up during the first, second, or hundredth gale. And just as a side note, I'm sure everybody here knows G-A-L-E, gale. We have a lot of young students that come through our property every year from 5 or 6 years of age to 35, 40 years of age. They struggle with the word gale. All we're talking about is a storm, right? Mm-hmm. And the Green Party cannot give up during the first, second, or hundredth storm, okay? So it's my intent to, I wrote the word help, but that's not the case. It's my intent to get someone from this room. I'm gonna inspire the Green Party to move towards local communities, okay? So in other words, we need community organizers, right? Community organizers make community work. We need teams, right? Together each achieves more, okay? So what we need is technology, engineering, arts and agriculture, math, science, and social studies. I guess you call it sociology nowadays, but social studies, okay? So what we're going to try and do is we're gonna try and inspire someone to purchase a CSA, okay? Not from Bittersweet Farm, unless you happen to live in Buellton, New York. Does anybody know what CSA stands for? Has everybody got some?
Community supported
agriculture, exactly, okay. Robin Van Eyne at the Robin Van Eyne Center in Massachusetts, many years ago, late 60s, early 70s, she had gone to Europe and she started the concept of community supported agriculture. Subscription chicken, subscription garlic. A cultural and relational revolution, okay. Revolution starts small and close to home, right? That's where it starts. Wendell Berry, okay? I'm assuming some people have heard of Wendell Berry or is reading. Mad Farmer, Wendell Berry, anybody?
Unsettling of America.
Unsettling of America, exactly. Agriculture and culture, okay? Culture, agriculture, soil arts, right? Agriculturist, soil artist, okay? Regenerative agriculture is revolutionary, okay? It's been around for thousands of years. Okay, thousands of years. Regenerative agriculture has been around for thousands of years. J.I. Rodale kind of coined the phrase organic. Steiner was more, Rudolf Steiner, 1920s to the 27, the series of biodynamic, Waldorf schools, okay, Steiner, Maria Thune, okay. I've got a lot to read and go through, but I'm gonna start with Wendell Berry, okay? You watch the slides. The goal here is understand that there's some of the slides have no people in them, okay? But guess what? Most of those slides have people. And why do they have people in them? Because we are part of the ecosystem, okay? We are part of this ecosystem. Right here, this is an ecosystem and we're part of it. May not be my favorite ecosystem, okay? But we're part of it. This is my ecosystem. This is where I live. This is where I thrive, okay? I'll try to get into some experiential learning. I'll try to touch a little bit base about full immersion experience. But spend some time listening to the words, looking at the slides, understand that we have many students from many schools, and that's what I'm trying to get the Green Party to think about, all right? In Salem, Massachusetts, right? Actually, Bittersweet Farm has a connection with Salem. We grow the ergot fungus in Huelden, New York as well. And Salem is quite famous for the Salem witch trials and the ergot fungus, the hallucinogen on the corn. I'm sorry, the hallucinogen on the rye. Winter rye, huh? I'm sorry. It's a hallucinogen mushroom grown on winter rye.
Oh, excuse me.
It's called ergot, E-R-G-O-T.
I've heard of it. Is that why they burn the witches?
I think that there's a lot of reasons why they burn the witches. I think it was primarily a white male patriarchal society. I don't know that for a fact, but Yeah, there's a lot of evidence that's suggesting now, because the ergot fungus grows fine on winter rye. And you'll see at some point some pictures of winter wheat in there and winter rye. So when you're growing your winter rye for rye bread, if you're not careful and you live in a warm, humid climate like this area, okay, the ergot fungus, a little black mushroom that grows on the rye seed, okay, and as you harvest or thresh your seeds, you'll see that the ergot fungus, you know, flushes off, but the spores remain in your rye berries or your rye seed, okay? And so you grind the whole thing up. You can't really see them. You grind it into flour, and we still do it the same way they did in Salem, Massachusetts. Okay, you've either got a hand crank or you've got a mortar and pestle, and you grind your winter rye up. And then you make it into rye bread, okay? And it's great. Nowadays, you stick your rye bread in a plastic bag, stick it in the refrigerator, microwave it. For the most part, if you live in the 21st century, which I do not yet, but I'm getting close, the ergot fungus is not going to affect us a lot anymore because of the way we keep things, preservatives, refrigeration. However, what I remember from back in the in Salem back in the day was when we, after we baked the rye bread, right, we would eat it like crazy when it's fresh, warm from the oven. Not a problem. But then we'd always put it on the big old groaning board in the center of the kitchen, okay, and so it's a half-eaten loaf of rye bread. Well, the flies landed there, it sat out in the heat and the humidity. The next morning, we're hungry for breakfast, you grab a chunk off it, and you get a nice big bite of the ergot fungus. The ergot fungus is a hallucinogen, very similar to velvet weed, okay, LSD type, you know, tripping, okay. And so there's stories about that say, well, the so-called witches ate it, and then they did crazy stuff, and people attacked them. My theory is that maybe the witches didn't eat it, because the witches were female. And if they're much like my community now, the females never got to eat first, okay? So the males got to eat the stuff first. So they took a big hunk of ergot fungus, ate it, hallucinated that the women are witches, we gotta burn them, right? It's just a story. I don't know how true it is. You guys have internet, okay? There's a lot of variations, okay? But see here, this is a perfect segue right here. That was the straw from either winter rye or winter wheat. Not the kid, but the fly. This was the straw, okay, veg straw. So when we thresh our grains, right, we end up with big piles of straw. And we take the grain and then we grind them up for rye flour, for buckwheat flour, for wheat flour, corn flour. If you have questions too, I'm happy to try to answer them. I'm going to run way out of time. But anyway.
This is a big subject.
Well, yeah, and so Wendell Berry, okay, commenting on Secretary of Agriculture Earl Butz, right? USDA Secretary Earl Butz under Richard Nixon. Earl Butz stated quite clearly, get big or get out, okay? He was, in my opinion, he was the devil, and he's trying hard to destroy small family farms today. I don't know how many years he's been dead. What we're trying to do, when I say we, Leah Penniman from Soulfire Farm, Bob and Flip from Little Grass Farm, the Robin Van Eyne Center, somebody knew Elizabeth Henderson in the last group I was talking, Elizabeth Henderson, Peacework Farm in New York. I've got a list of farms that I'd like to inspire you to contact, okay? Farmer Dave's in Draycut, Massachusetts. Not far from here, there's a place in Massachusetts. It's called Tufts University, Medford, Mass. Book and Plow Farm, okay? University of Massachusetts at Amherst has a farm at Amherst, okay? So the goal is to get at least one Green Party member to go into their community, right? Reach out, do something within our grasp, right? To bring the community together. We're gonna teach them what to do with kohlrabi. That's all we're gonna do. But you know what? Every once in a while, we're gonna slip in something about, oh, the new money economy, democracy, the republic, maybe the Green Party. Maybe we'll mention something about a Green Party meeting when we're talking about green tomatoes, okay? So we've got Earthwork Urban Farm right here. I passed around some of the stuff. I'd like to pass this around. This is compost, okay? This is something, this is the beginning of compost. Many people in here are probably gonna get sick from the smell and not care for it, okay? I want you to understand that this is filled with all sorts of things that I probably shouldn't say the word in public, okay? So chicken fecal matter, okay? Pig fecal matter, cow shit, bullshit, all sorts of stuff in here, right? Clamshell, oyster shell, right? And it's not the kind of thing that you want to stick your hands in and work and manipulate, okay? you know, if you do, you want to make sure you wear gloves or something to that effect. This is finished compost here, and you would not know that this has pig manure in it, okay? You would not know, okay? You would know that it's acidic if it's got a very, very sweet flavor, right? You would know that it's basic or alkaline if it's pretty mild or the flavor isn't very good, but certainly you would never put dirt in your mouth. I mean, not as a kid, you know, no one would ever stick peanut peas or nuts, rocks up their nose or eat dirt, right? Unless you're a kid, right? Everybody.
Children.
So now we have finished compost, okay? This compost, in 1 teaspoon of this compost, there's over 1 billion bacteria in there. There's miles and miles of, and I can't see them, okay? There's miles and miles of fungal filament in here, okay? There's protozoa, there's actinomycetes, okay? Actinomycetes are an antibiotic that is helpful to us, okay? I should touch base on that before I go. Let me throw on this a little bit, okay?
You want me to back up?
Nah, the slides can keep scrolling. If you have questions on a particular slide, just stop me, okay?
I tried to pause and it doesn't work.
Okay, well, that's all right. If you have, so, on the actinomycetes, right? They are an economically important bacteria to our survival, okay? Without them, we won't survive. So we take Roundup, okay, which is a glyphosate, okay, and we use that glyphosate to kill everything living in the soil, okay. Then there's studies out there that have proven that in breast milk is glyphosate. Mm-hmm. So a newborn baby is born, the baby nurses off her mother, and so from birth until ad infinitum, that baby is consuming glyphosate. You've probably heard about all the lawsuits, right? But glyphosate is acting as an antibiotic in our gut. And if anybody's ever had to go on antibiotics for a long period of time, you have no good bacteria in your gut afterwards because Roundup is killing it, okay? So you now have all sorts of digestive problems, all right? When you come in contact with this soil, when you get outside and you smell the soil, you have a good, healthy, rich chocolate cake compost, there's billions of good bacteria in here. One specific one happens to be a friend of mine. It's called Mycobacteria vacca, okay? Mycobacteria, spelled M-Y-C-O, bacteria, okay? Vacca, V-A-C-C-A-E, right? Okay? A soil dweller releases a natural serotonin reuptake inhibitor. Guess what? I don't have to buy Prozac at the pharmacy anymore. I don't have to go to Bayer Aspirin Corporation and beg them to give me the chemicals that make me sick so that they can sell me the chemicals that make me feel better. I can stick my hands in this gross, disgusting manure, okay, and it will be taken up by the pores in my skin, my nasal passages, and my eyes, okay? And it's a health-giving, it's one of the life forces in this stuff, okay? And so without soil, without the life force, we're screwed, okay? As a direct result of industrial agriculture, right, farmers against Trump, resist, okay? Small-scale, local, regenerative agricultural entrepreneurs include people who are resisting because we're at war, W-W-A-R-R, okay? Worldwide Agrarian Resistance and Renaissance, rebirth, right? That's what we're at, okay? That's where we need to be. Clarissa Pinkel Estes, I think she states it really clear as to what we need to do. So I want to give you some specifics. I'm gonna pass this around and you can look at it. And please, this is unfinished compost. So start a compost pile in your kitchen. If you got a tiny apartment, okay, and that's all you got, you can start a compost pile right in your kitchen, okay, without a big deal, without a huge process. You can go to a hardware store or Lowe's or online, and you can buy a small composter, okay? You can also take a brown cardboard box, okay, put a little bit of newspaper in that box, and put scraps in there that will compost. You can add worms to it, you can add a little bit of water to it. At Cornell University, Cornell Park Extension, we have composted whole Holstein cows, 1,200 pound animals. We found out that you can't compost them alive because they don't hold still. Once they're dead, okay, by whatever reason, you can bury them, and in 6 months' time, all I have left is the skull and a couple of the larger bones, which are okay because at that point in time, they come brittle, become very brittle. We crush them up, and we use that as where our bone meal comes from, okay? I'm getting a little off track. What I want to do is I want the Green Party to grow. I want the Green Party to go into your communities, all right? And you live in an apartment somewhere. And I'm going to give you a specific example. John and Kelly were students of ours. They're making pictures of them in there. They graduated with degrees in environmental studies from the University of Minnesota at Minneapolis, okay? They drove from there, they had a full immersion experience at Bittersweet Farm. Full immersion simply means that they have to work 24 hours a day for the entire season that they are, approximately 4 months. On occasion, we do feed them. They're on call 24 hours a day. It's a typical farming situation, okay? So they were required to start, generally we started in the morning around 4 a.m. We did chores from 4 a.m. till about 7. They would come in, we would have a nice farmer's breakfast, okay? And we cook vegan, we cook vegetarian, we cook omnivore, and we cook carnivore, okay? And so I was in charge of the carnivore, and we would make a huge carnivore breakfast, and that meant bacon, ham, sausage from, you probably saw some of my best friends up there, Hope, or Hyssop, Ebony, Ivory, Panther. These are the names of my best friends, and my pigs. Tamworth pigs, Gloucester Old Spots, large blacks, Sam, Boris, who's quite a large pig, he was quite nice. And I invite all of my animals to dinner at some point in their life. Okay? None of them have refused to give themselves up, and so we cook them and we eat them. And with heritage breeds, that's what we raise a lot of, that's the goal, okay? We need to get away from monoculture of the mind, Monsanto, Bayer aspirin. We need to get away from the poisons that we pick up at the grocery store, and we need to diversify, okay? We need the Green Party. We need diversification, biodiversity, diversity in the microbiome, diversity in your livestock. So the Tamworth pig was from Tamworth, England, was brought into Canada in the 1600s somewhere. It's a long, lean bacon hog. Thomas Bennett brought it from Canada into upstate New York. And there's the red pigs in there, Tamworth pigs. John and Kelly from the University of Minnesota, full immersion experience at the farm, on call 24 hours a day. When they left, after 4 months, we did their exit interview for them, okay? And we did a critique. And at that particular day, they both were way more teary-eyed and sad than I anticipated, so I knew they were ready to get out of there. I was mistaken, okay? They were crying because they didn't want to leave. They'd been there 4 full months, and there were many, many days, God's honest truth, that they would start at 2 or 3 o'clock Thursday morning, and they would not get off until 9 o'clock Friday night, okay? They would work that whole clock. And yet they didn't want to leave because they had not been there long enough to grasp the entirety of the operation, the whole of the operation. They'd only gone through 4 months, okay? If you want to learn how to grow food, if you want to learn how to regenerate the community, it's a 24-hour a day, 365 day a year process for a minimum of 500 years, okay? Okay, it takes its toll, but at some point you'll get there. So. This is a picture of the house and one of the students walking from the cabin. So the cabin in the woods is out here. These are Tamworth hogs. That was a traditional litter. We do try very hard to genetically engineer our own animals. Oh my God, we can't use that term. We take and do things the old fashioned. So I take Alice, who's a very small sow, Tamworth. I breed her to a small boar. I get a smaller number of piglets in the litter. And I get a smaller pig that's easier to handle, a better mother, okay? And all I do is select. It's no different than selecting wheat. Does anybody remember Gregor Mendel and the peas, right? Mm-hmm. Okay? And, roan animals, crossing animals, the old-fashioned way. You look at it to me like you're lost. Let me finish up with John Kelly. That's okay. From John and Kelly are not members of the Green Party, but they left our farm, yes?
I just wanted to know what breed of cow that was.
Those are Scottish Highlands. Yep.
Oh. Okay.
I think the one on the left was Elsa. Don't remember her name or his name. This was Elsa. There's a whole story in the Small Farmers Journal that I put somewhere, right here. The Small Farmers Journal. This is something I'd like you to subscribe to. Okay. The Small Farmers Journal. Sisters Oregon. Lynn R. Miller. Green Party people will love this. Okay. The guy's a genius. Okay. He has proposed the Land Stewardship Act for 2020, the National Pork and Greens Act, okay? It's serious, he's serious about it. Yeah, you can take a look at this. Any of the paperwork I sent around, you can have. These books and magazines I kind of like to hang out to. So John and Kelly left our farm. They went back to Minneapolis, Minnesota. They moved into a second floor apartment, and that's where they started farming, okay? The reason I point that out is because there's a number of people, especially in Boston, that probably don't have 112 acres and half a dozen Highland cattle. Not anymore. Okay, Brian Donahue, Reclaiming the Commons, Weston, Mass., has a beautiful historical book, an analysis
of the Western Massachusetts and Boston, Massachusetts, someplace called Harvard. Okay, Harvard and Mass or something. Okay, so that book will give you a lot more detail than I have time to give you. Brian Donahue, Reclaiming the Commons.
Yes.
Are you familiar with Charles Walters of Acres Magazine?
Oh, sure, absolutely. Charles Walters, you know Joe Salatin from Swope, Virginia?
Well, I don't know Joe, but I used to know Charles.
Yeah.
And are you familiar with his parity economy and the farming?
Somewhat. I've learned a little bit more about parity today. That is something that I don't know a lot about, but yes, I read Acres Magazine, we subscribe to it.
Well, Charles is gone and they don't talk about parity anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Now, we get a lot of books on farming as an ecosystem, the farmer's ecosystem. We work with Fertrell a little bit, which has been connected to Acres USA. We're in, like I said, Hubleton, New York. I don't get a lot of current information.
What I learned, I'm not a farmer, I'm like a city girl, but what I learned from Charles was that all wealth, and wealth,
yep,
meaning everything in this
right
room and out there that you can put your hands on, is all wealth comes from the earth.
That's right.
That's the basis of our whole economy. We wouldn't have manufacturing except that we have our farmers and our miners and all the wealth from
right
the earth that God has given us.
That's exactly right, 100% right. The importance of humus, right, in the human economy seldom receives sufficient emphasis. Suffice it to say that humus, right, okay, the soil, the humic acid and the organic matter in your soil, humus, okay, not hummus, not chickpeas,
mm-hmm,
dirt, okay, compost, right? The importance of humus in the human economy seldom receives sufficient emphasis. Suffice it to say that it probably represents the most important source of human wealth on this planet. That was written by S.A. Waksman in a book called Humus prior to 1941.
That's right.
If you're really into soils, look up Lady Eve Balfour and the Soil Association from 1890 till about 1910. The woman was amazing, okay? I mentioned Steiner already. Maria Thune has picked up a lot of his work at this point. Get back to John Kelly for a minute, okay? Because I don't think I'm going to have time to do this exactly as I had planned, okay? But John and Kelly went back to Minneapolis, Minnesota, which apparently is a good-sized city, okay? I don't know much about it, okay? But it's a good-sized city. And so they rented an apartment, which they said was cheap. It was like $800 a month, and I'm thinking, that ain't cheap. But my daughter bought a farm and a house across the street from me, and she has a significant mortgage payment. It's like $248 and change each month. And that's tough to go on a small farmer's income. That's a fair amount of money. We bought our farm originally, 112 acres, for $37,500. We paid cash for it, and it was not a big deal. The problem I'm having now is the big CAFOs, confined animal feeding operations, concentrated animal feeding operations, have moved into my neighborhood. They're buying up small farms, mm-hmm, left and right.
Mm-hmm.
So I was being taxed at $37,500. I was paying $690 a year. I'm now being taxed on the same piece of property with a house that has one end that's collapsed. The floor and the root cellar generally are flooded. We've got one end that has a greenhouse and a decent structure that we can use, but I'm being taxed about $4,000 a year now. My gross sales is between $38,000 and $42,000 a year. My net is somewhere around $10,400 a year, and then I pay $4,000 in taxes. So
that's
it's a
right
bit of a struggle, even in Hubleton, to make ends meet.
Right.
So we had to sell the Porsche. You know, you have to make sacrifices. John and Kelly moved into a second floor apartment in Minneapolis, Minnesota, in a city. That's where they started to farm, okay? And how they farmed is exactly how my wife taught them to farm. They took vermiculite, okay? Similar to perlite, okay? Volcanic rock, it's mined. There's differences, but it's naturally occurring, okay, in the soil. It's horticultural grade. And they would spread the vermiculite in the bottom of the tray. Then we would go to Klaus Martin in Penn Yan, and we buy certified organic pea seed, wheat seed, corn seed, sunflower seed, buckwheat seed, any number of seeds. My intent was to actually do this, but if anybody has time, you spread the vermiculite on, right? You soak the vermiculite in water so it holds water, okay? If you put just the water in there, it evaporates and moves a lot more, and so the seed floats. Then you just fill that tray side to side with pea seeds. Then you take and put the cover on it, and if anybody wants this, they can have this or they can email us. This is how to do it. What John and Kelly did was they created, with my wife's assistance, a farm of microbeans, a micro mix and shoots. So this one that I'm showing you is pea shoots, okay? And so they have shelves in their windows filled with black plastic trays that they put shoots in.
Sorry to interrupt, did you just put the vermiculite, did you put in the compost or potting soil?
Nope, nope. So this one here for shoots, you just put vermiculite and then you seed with water. And then you cover the tray completely and put it in the dark and don't move it. In 5 days, those seeds are going to, probably some of these people, some of you people are almost as old as I am, I guess. And you remember bean sprouts, right?
Yes.
Put them in the, okay, bean sprouts, okay? Similarly, okay? So in 5 days, you have your pea sprouts. What happens is the tray starts to lift up like this from the strength of the plant. That's when you know to take the cover off and put them in sunlight and you green them up, okay? So your peas will get up that high and be perfectly green, yeah.
How much sunlight do they need?
They don't even need sunlight. This light in here is sufficient enough.
Okay.
They will green up in this light in 2 or 3 days. And then you trim them, okay? Now, John and Kelly do this with peas, with beans, with corn, with buckwheat, popcorn. It's not even, it's popcorn, buckwheat. It seemed like it was one other. They have them on trays in there. It costs approximately seed, vermiculite, not the initial investment of the trays. The trays are about 10 cents a piece, so you've got to figure it over. But with an initial investment of about $3, they get 2 cuttings of peas out here, okay? And the first cutting is about 1 pound. They take it to the 2 restaurants across the street from them, and they sell them 1 pound of fresh-cut pea shoots at their urban farm for $14, okay? And so they have big picture windows and trays. Wouldn't, all they did was scrap lumber and build some shells, slide the trays on, okay? And so what, as the Green Party members, what we do, I don't care if you live in an apartment. If you got 112 acres, then talk to me and you can teach me. But if you're living in an urban environment or a suburban environment, a small apartment, you do what you can, okay? You start small, you grow slow, if at all, okay? So start small and stay small. But what you do is, I remember times when my mother would have a neighbor over and they would just sit at the kitchen table drinking coffee, okay, and having a conversation. That's what I want to see happen, okay? We need to have community organizers, okay? We need to recreate, regenerate the local community. So you say to your neighbor, you know, I'm gonna throw a garden party, okay? And when they come to the garden party, a revolution breaks out, right? So you've got a garden party in your backyard, you're planting a garden together, okay? You're talking about peas and beans and radishes, okay? Radish seed. You can drop radish seed in the ground at the right time of the year, and 18 days later, you can harvest a radish. Peas, you can put them in a tray in your kitchen on top of your refrigerator, and less than 10 days later, you've got a harvest. If you go to the micromix, then you add the vermiculite and the compost here, and you grow what they call microgreens. Okay, it's a little bit more complicated. Doesn't the details I can tell you, or I'm pretty confident all these details are now on the computer, okay?
I have a question. Not that I'm going to do this, but if I wanted to, I live in an apartment in New York City with 2 roommates.
Yeah.
Is this going to smell because they get...
No.
In fact, it might help clean the air.
Exactly.
It filters.
Yep. And then for the pea shoot specifically, you end up with this, okay? I'm not going to take a huge mouthful, although I like it. I'm going to struggle to talk with a mouthful. But this becomes... These seeds become this in 10 days or less, okay, in your apartment. And if you want a little extra income, $14 a pound is what we're getting for Hubleton, New York, at the one fine dining restaurant in Canton. It's called the 1844 House. And they get a customer every couple of years, but they've been in business a while. We don't have a lot of fine dining restaurants. I don't think we have a lot of fine people up there, but when you go to 1844 House up there, it's probably going to, you know, fancy restaurant down here.
So after you do your 2 harvests, do you throw out what's there?
Well, then what you do is you peel up the entire root mass and you feed it to your chicken. Because
I don't have
John Kelly in Minneapolis, Minnesota, silky bantam hen back to their apartment with them. Okay, and keep it as a pet in their apartment.
My
and
roommates
feed,
will never allow a hen
whole thing
in
to the
apartment.
Chicken. That's fine. You compost it. You put it on your front lawn and turn it into lawn grass. Okay.
Okay.
It's at that point it's edible. We feed it to our livestock. You know,
got you.
The Highland cattle, the pigs, the sheep, the chickens. Anybody will eat it. It can be composted, okay? But the point that I'm trying to make is that you throw the garden party, okay? And you convince one neighbor to come over. Instead of having a cup of coffee, right, you put together 1 pea shoot tray. And this begins to snowball, okay? Then Janine Darlington, 1968, grow it, okay? she set out back then, this is old style hippie organic, you know, I think the real greens, probably some of you, you know, when you go back far enough, all she did was have her and her kids dig up a 10-foot by 10-foot area of their front lawn, okay? Not the back lawn, no, don't hide this stuff, okay? Even my brother's got a little patch in the front lawn where he's growing milkweed in Warwick, Rhode Island, okay? Looks a little out of place compared to the rest of the lawns, but I'm proud of him, and he's doing a good job. So, take your front lawn, okay? And there's many, many ways, okay? If you want, if you're worried about carbon sequestration, which the Green Party should be, we're worried about environmental damage, first do no harm, you just do a lasagna garden. You don't even dig anything up, okay? You take the root mass from here, you take leaves, you take newspaper, you take cardboard, and you lay it on an area that you can handle, 3 foot by 3 foot, okay? And then you put your grass clippings and your leaves, and then you find somebody not far from you. I don't know if you're in Massachusetts, where you're at, but you know, there's farms that I told you about. You go to their farm and you get a 5-gallon pail of compost or fresh manure or whatever you want. Now, fresh manure will stink, okay? Now, I happen to be really enamored with the smell of different animal manures. There's a whole book called Humanure, okay? It will teach you how to compost every form of fecal matter that you come in contact with, okay? It can be Chilean nitrate, it can be bat guano, okay? It can be cat crap or dog crap, human crap.
Poop,
it's
sir.
Poop, okay, poop, whatever, right? Okay?
Everybody poop.
Poop. Exactly, everybody.
I got a t-shirt.
So you can compost those, right? Yep.
I think you should sum up and then, you know, open up a question.
Yeah, I'm like,
okay,
I'm
let me, okay.
I love this smell, of course.
Yep, I do too.
Okay, okay. It's a fetish thing going on. I'm out,
so,
sister.
Horse farm.
Okay. I didn't get to everything, but leave here today, if you would, and create an app that helps you to adopt a farm and a farmer, okay? Do what you can what you produce. You will become freer when you feed yourself, feed your family, and the soul of your community, okay? So this is for young and old alike, okay? Red, green, black, white must come together and create the new paradigm where crop mobs and weed dating and the joy of living thrive, okay? I can go into more details, but the gist of it is that somebody's gonna leave here and they're gonna go to Farmer Days in Draycott, Mass, Earthwork in Michigan, Turning Point in Indiana, Milkweed in New York, Lucky Foot Ranch in Rhode Island. Paul West sent his card, and this company sent their card. There's small farms near every one of you, okay? And the small farmers are begging for people to come out. Now, I have a small farm up near me who said he does not want young people, old people running helter-skelter on his farm. But you go to a farm, you introduce yourself to the farmer, and you find out if there's a relationship. If there is, you do a CSA, Community Supported Agriculture. You then become a member of a CSAA, Community Supported Arts and Agriculture, right? Utilitarian arts, okay? Liberal arts, the fine arts, painting, sculpture, are and have always been a part of small farming, okay? The Amish community, the Mennonites, the quilting, right? The in Peru, the Andes Mountains, the throwing of the clay pots, the clothing that they wear, okay? It's amazing. And so any one of us can find a small farmer through Local Harvest or Garden Share. We can call him up, and the guy's an old guy, and he's crotchety, and he doesn't want to talk to you. Don't go there. The guy's Paul West, and he's a young guy in West Farm Organics in Westerly, Rhode Island. I don't know how, is anybody near Westerly, Rhode Island? I don't know where it is, but, you know, go there. The guy's begging.
Check in, brother, check in.
Right. And you can find these places. So then, what you do then is you develop a relationship with that person. You start to buy seedlings from them. Then you bring the seedlings back to your neighborhood, right? And you make sure that your neighbors see you planting tomato plants in the front yard. Now, after the kids have come and stolen the tomatoes that are on the vine, you have to figure out a way of incorporating them into the Green Party values, okay? Green Party ideas, okay? Peace, democracy, ecology, and social justice. Those are very, very easy concepts to talk about when I'm harvesting peas. On Monday, Tuesday, before I came here, we harvested avalanche snow peas and snowbird snow peas. And you can have a conversation when you are at a crop mob, okay? So read Women Who Dig, invest locally. All politics are local. Adopt a local farm near you, okay? Antithetical to USDA Secretary Earl Butts under Nixon, and Secretary of State Henry Kissinger,
Food and food production shall never be used as a weapon against freedom. It's up to you at this time in the present to declare worldwide grand resistance and rebirth, renaissance. You and the Green Party will start where you're at. Use what you have. Do what you can to teach Green Party values while feeding the soul of your community through hands-on production. Our lives begin to end when we become silent about things that matter. It's time to move to the future of family farms, micro farms, where humans are in contact with the soil. We need more loving stewards, women-headed farms, okay? Read Women Who Dig, okay? We must build an alternative food system and state and federal policies that support that food system. The Land Stewardship Act of 2020 deserves your attention and support. What we do for ourselves dies with us. What we do for others and the world remains immortal. Okay, I went to a garden party and a revolution broke out. Remember, revolutions start small and close to home. Good luck, Godspeed. Thank you for listening. Ask questions. I forgot another couple hours of discussion. Any questions?
I wanted to take a group picture. This is so exciting.
That's great. I think people on the slide, what I was trying to get at, I don't know, Hubleton, New York is not the most diverse place in the planet, but we get a lot of people coming through there, and we're trying to build on the diversity. You know, they're saying, you know, two heads are better than one, okay? Well, I firmly believe that when I get young people out there, old people, doesn't make a difference. I got 20 different people out there, and we're looking at the same problem, okay? We get a lot of different possibilities. When it's 2 o'clock in the morning and I've been at this for 3 days and we're yelling and screaming, my kids and I are yelling and screaming at each other, that's pouring down rain, the wind is going through, we don't make the best decisions, okay? But nowadays my kids have these computer phones like everybody, they pick up the computer phone, they dial to the kids out in the cabin and they say, the cows, the pigs, the sheep, and the horse are all loose. Somebody left the gate open. So at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, everybody runs across and we find them together. I can't do it alone. You can't do it alone, but you can garner support. We have to take a picture, whatever you want to do. Any other questions? I mean, ask questions.
I have three, right?
That's fine.
The Land Stewardship Act 2020.
Briefly, Lynn R. Miller, Small Farmers Journal, okay, Sisters, Oregon. The Land Stewardship Act of 2020 would be very similar to the Homestead Act. I don't know if you're familiar with the Homestead Act, okay? So there was, and this is there's no reason we can't do this today. But years ago, the government said, we want to destroy the indigenous population. We want to destroy the rest of the country. Okay, so here, you can go out and you can have 130 acres, okay, for free with some sweat equity. I mean, you're going to have a couple kids die along the way, but, you know, it's collateral damage, it's not a crisis. But if you manage to maintain control of that land for 5 years, it becomes yours free and clear until the railroad robber barons come in and steal it from you, which was always a bit of a problem. Okay, so instead of all those issues, I don't know if the Small Farmers Journal is kicking around on it, but in my head, what I remember Lynn had said was that we're looking to form a board, okay? And this is going to sound like a little bit of a stretch, but we're playing their game. We go to the we live very near Fort Drum, but anyway, military base. So we're trying to encourage veterans to farmers or farms for veterans.
Oh, yeah.
So we solicit the Department of Defense to give us a tiny, tiny percentage of money so that we can create a Land Stewardship Act. So we have a board that has a general on it, that has a young, angry, unsuccessful organic farmer, an old, retired organic farmer who's out of his mind. You have someone from the State Department, you've gone to someone from the Green Party. You put together a bunch of people, put up some parameters and say, what we want to do is have another Homestead Act. Well, where are we going to find the land? I can tell you that some of the land exists right now in Detroit, Michigan, okay?
Yeah.
There's lots of it, exactly. And there's already farms started out there, right? So what we do is we say, okay, there is now 2 acres in Detroit, Michigan, and there's a young kid on the street, he's homeless, we give him the land, make it that simple. Well, the kid has no idea what kohlrabi is, right, or celeriac, okay? So what we do is we go to NOFA New York, or we go to NOFA Rhode Island, or MAFCA, or we go to any one of the mentoring farms, Essex County Farm in Essex County, New York, and we solicit someone who probably already has a connection with the Green Party, depending on your definition of green, okay? They're already involved with the Green Party. We go to that place, we mentor the young people. We have hundreds of young people, you saw them, going through that farm every year, okay? So you have incubator farms. We figure out a way of giving that old house lot to somebody who has hands-on mentoring, okay? We don't just say, here, good luck, okay? It's like when you take a 10,000 acre farm and you divide it up now so that 100 people each have 10 acres or whatever it is, or 200, you know, it crashes, it crumbles, okay? Oh, yeah. It may be hard to believe, but there's a lot of people who really think that I can just walk out and I can throw a handful of wheat out in the front yard, right? And I can command the wheat to grow. It doesn't work quite that way, okay? So anyway, come on with your question. I mean, like the Land Stewardship Act, we need to put land into more loving stewards, and we have to have the old guys, the old women, whatever. I mean, and there's a lot of women. The Giving Farm, right here, the Giving Farm, okay? This is the Giving Farm out in Iowa. Bhutan was one of the first countries to require all their farms to be organic. Cuba, when Cuba lost their deal or contract with the Russians and the Americans were screwing things around there, Cuba had no choice but to have their special period, okay? So during Cuba's special period, all the people living there lost, 10 to 20 pounds, because it was a special period. They didn't have food, okay? But in short order, okay, in 3 years, they were able to, at a very tiny scale, feed the entire nation of Cuba, okay, organically. And now the U.S. government's going down there and saying, oh, wow, you guys have done a great job. This is gorgeous. It's wonderful. We've got tons of toxic chemicals and huge tractors that we need to get rid of. We're willing to give them to you at a reduced cost so that you don't have to farm in this healthy, organic way anymore.
Another question. I don't do this composting stuff, but when I have, like, you know, stuff organic, I just throw it out to my yard.
Sure.
There's
nothing wrong with that.
I feel so much better.
There's a neat thing, though. They call it lasagna gardening now. There's lots of different ways, but a lot of people now are taking in their front yard because they want it to look a little neater and they don't want to attract squirrels or whatever. Skunks, okay. So you put a piece of cardboard or newspaper down on the grass, and you pile your food scraps on top of that, and then just cover them with grass clippings or leaves or shovelfuls of sand or sawdust. I don't know if you've got a partner that's a woodworker, wood shavings, you know, something like that. You're trying to achieve a pretty optimum carbon nitrogen ratio if you're getting fussy about it. But your way is perfectly fine.
Okay, go ahead.
I already asked a question, so.
Okay.
Yeah, I am interested in being incubated because in Worcester, Massachusetts, I started teaching everyday people how to sustainably grow their own healing foods.
Yep.
And we use regenerative agriculture, so we're really looking at permaculture and making it really small, like using the techniques of lasagna gardening. But we're really encouraging people to grow their own foods because it closes the food security insecurity
gap,
and it also closes the climate change issues.
Yep.
And so we're allowing everyday people to realize, whoa, we have a hand in this.
We have power, don't we?
Exactly.
We have power. Yep.
So I'm completely like eating this up, and I would love to learn how I could be incubated.
So you said Worcester, Mass?
Yeah, Worcester, Massachusetts.
The first one that comes to mind is Springfield, Mass, Amherst, Mass, and Medford, Mass. But it's NOFA, Massachusetts, NOFA-MA. And every summer, and it may be still summer here, may still be going, every summer, NOFA, Mass has a huge organic grower, small-scale, local, regenerative agricultural entrepreneur conference at Amherst, Mass College. Okay? The Book and Plow Farm at Tufts University have a tremendous number of young people and older people that can provide you with a lot of knowledge and information. If you're seriously looking for a full immersion experience, I don't want to take you away from Worcester, Mass, but if you're looking for a serious, you know, full immersion experience up in St. Lawrence County, we can give you tons more knowledge and information that you would ever want. Brian Donahue, Reclaiming the Commons, right in this area, Weston, Mass, is a very good read, and I think, like I said before, Harvard University, it's a big school, and they have like 20 acres and a bunch of trees. I think they still have connection to Weston, Mass, and what they call internships, apprenticeships, or fellowships. This was a long time ago, but I'm pretty sure they still do fellowships there. And that's a place to learn. NOFA, connect with NOFA, because they're nationwide, and they're a really good organization. They could say to you, geez, you know, 2 miles down the street, there's a farm that would like you to intern for them one day a week, and then they come up to your, that happens, that type of thing. Then they come up to your farm one day a week and they teach. It's reaching out, community-based learning, experiential learning.
Made a point.
I'm sorry.
See,
their conference was just last week, I think.
Oh, was it? Okay.
In Amherst. But But Worcester is
no,
like...
There's one coming up August. I was invited to
yeah,
speak.
Okay.
There's one coming up August 9 through 11. NOFA Mass. And I'm speaking to them, but I liked what you said specifically, which was, you know, getting somebody interested to partner specifically with, you know, senior farmers, really. You know, like, you have... You know, generations of information.
If you can
I'm
pay for my
farmer.
Jet from Hewelton, it takes me no more than an hour and a half to get down here by jet. I'll fly down twice a week, and I will mentor the whole school or the whole program. Short of that, you really need to look, go to Worcester, Mass., look up local harvest, you know, and find out who is within that area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you don't hit it off with the farmer for you know whatever reason, if he won't allow you to put your footprints on his field. Don't
keep rolling.
Yeah, okay. Yep. Walk away.
Don't
you know, politely walk away. Okay. But
stick.
You find somebody that has a little tiny bit more knowledge than you, that's willing to share. Sharing is caring.
That's it.
That's where you need to go. Yes, I'm sorry.
And why are you so against the aquaponics or hydroponics? What do you
yeah.
think?
Okay,
the
so against it.
Right.
First off, I'm not totally against it because it is an alternative. However, what I am against is reducing the life force and the energy in our food, okay? And so hydroponics and aquaponics are recirculating water. That's good, okay? However, they're not cleaning the water. The water is not being rejuvenated through the soil. When you put and you grow in water, you'll find that your lettuce, we've done it, the lettuce grows and looks nice, the basil grows and looks nice. However, the nutrient density in a tomato grown in aquaponic system or hydroponic system, either one, the nutrient density far lower than the nutrient density of a tomato grown in a healthy chocolate cake compost.
Mm-hmm.
Not only are we missing, when you just have water and not soil, you're not only missing Mycobacteria vacca, which is something that it enthralls the community, it brings the community out, it helps us, you're also missing endo and ecto mycorrhizas. You're missing the filaments of fungal, the fungal filaments, the hyphae. You're missing the life force and the energy. Now, my brother's gonna laugh at me a little bit, but we're missing the biodynamics, okay? Water is great, and water can be potentized, okay? We can create a vortex, and we can make use of it. I think, Glenn, you're the one that gave me the information about water and its properties of it, about this.
What about systems that include like fish or maybe other
sure.
wildlife?
And you are
like
getting,
the
you are
cycle.
Getting, right. I'm not telling you not to do it because
right.
in an urban environment, if that's your option, it's certainly better than going to the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
But it is missing the life force. It's missing the energy. Water is part of it. But think of it in soil. You have soil with everything in it, a billion life forms, diversity, plus water, okay? So in your aquaponic situation at the Better Farm in Redwood, New York, they've got a nice little aquaponics situation where they have some fish in a tank and they recirculate the water. The fish manure, the fish effluent, is a little bit on the toxic side, okay? And so what happens is when our corn, okay, the little corn shoots, take up an excess amount of synthetic nitrogen or natural nitrogen in the form of urea, in terms of fish effluent, okay, we toxify a little bit of that corn. There's nitrate and nitrate poisoning possibilities. It's been proven that it's true in cows. For humans, it's a bit more long-term, because obviously we're not ruminants. So in other words, when you have aquaponics or hydroponics, you're forcing NPK, right, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, into the water, either from fish, or from fish emulsion, seaweed, or kelp. I'm not telling you not to do it, okay? But I'm not telling you not to eat a Snickers bar once in a while. Just don't eat Snickers bars all the time. Have a small hydroponic system, a small aquaponic system, as addition to. Herbs and lettuce and greens grow nice, but it's not utilizing the energy of the earth, okay? It's not utilizing that biodiversity, so we are missing something, okay? And I can give you the list if you want of things we're missing. Also, too, if anybody wants to leave, can leave. You guys can leave, close the door, shut the lights off. I'll be talking.